It took you guys that long to get it? I'm going to have to keep making the puns if that's how slow we're going to be. Goodness, maybe the nachos and the corn dogs had more of an effect on us than we thought. But as we continue to look at this concept of pleasing faith, as evidenced by the actions of those that are in Hebrews chapter 11, I thought tonight would be a good time to take a step back for a moment and remind ourselves what faith is as we look at what's happening in Noah's story. First, I want us to appreciate and understand that faith is not trusting in something for which there are no facts. Okay? Faith is not trusting in something for which there are no facts. Second, it is also not putting your trust in someone or something you know nothing about. But what faith is warranted confidence and justified trust. All right? So when we start talking about warranted, there's good grounds for it. If it's justified, that means how we're going about our behaviors and our facts. And the reason I wanted to remind us of this and talk about this is because that is what we see happening with Noah. When you look at Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 7, the writer there says, "By faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith." Now, we go back and we look at this. He was told by God about something that he had not yet seen as a reference to Genesis chapter 6 when we see all of these things happening. And Noah had faith in God before the flood. Understand that. Look at what it says in Genesis 6 and verse 9. These are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man. How is the person attaining righteousness? By faith. Right? He was blameless in his time. Noah walked with God. This is the same thing that we talked about with Enoch. Walking with God. This is a faith-driven journey that Noah is participating in. By the time we get to Genesis chapter 7 and verse 1, it says, "Then the Lord said to Noah, enter the ark, you and all your household, for you alone I have seen to be righteous before me in this time." We're being told over and over again that Noah was a righteous man before the flood is occurring, which takes us back to Hebrews 11, first couple of verses there, which says, "Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen, for by it the men of old gained approval." So understand, before we even get into answering the question, Noah had faith in God. He was operating on this faith. He was living by that faith. He's walking according to that faith. But now he has to exercise, he has to put that faith into action in something that he hasn't seen yet and be assured that it would happen. So the question is, what is it that Noah had never seen before? And it's kind of fun to speculate. I'm really getting nervous because I'm about to say something 94% of you is going to disagree with. But I'm going to say it anyway. It's kind of fun to speculate about what the world looked like pre-flood. For instance, I'm convinced personally that it was one large continent. What many call Pangaea, as we look at the earth. And that the surface of the earth changed drastically from all of the water that enveloped our entire globe and changed the surface of the planet. I'm convinced of that. It's pure speculation, because real quick, anybody that was living during Noah's time that could see the earth before and after on that one? Anyone here named Ham, Shem, Curly, Japheth? We don't know. And so Darren and I spent, when Nathan was at the house, he and Missy came out, and we spent a good amount of time just speculating about what things look like during this time period in history. And it was fun. It's a good time. And for many, when you read that phrase in Hebrews chapter 11 that about these things that he had not seen yet, they are referring to the idea that rain had not fallen on the earth prior to the flood. Now, this idea originates in Genesis chapter 2, verses 5 and 6, where it says, "Now, You can get that up there for me. There we go. Now, no shrub of the field was yet in the earth, and no plant of the field had yet sprouted, for the Lord God had not sent rain upon the earth, and there was no man to cultivate the ground, but a mist used to rise from the earth and water the whole surface of the ground. Now, we're going to pause here for a second. Go back one slide, please, Dylan. One more. There we go. Notice what Moses is writing for us in Genesis chapter 2, which is the creation story. And creation is not finished yet, according to what he's writing here. And at this point in the creation, no rain had fallen on the ground yet. Why had no rain fallen on the ground yet? There was no man to cultivate the ground. No rain because there's no man. Seeds hadn't sprouted, so God sends a mist. I didn't realize this. Sonny finished planting the garden this last week, and so I was like, terrific, free food. But she did it all very differently this year than she's done in the past. In the past, she's bought plantlings. That's not the right word, but they're small plants that grow into big plants. I'm not a gardener, obviously, right? Seedlings? Plant, you know what I'm talking about? Okay, we're moving on. She decided to go with just straight seeds this time. And remember that 14-day period of rain that we got where it was just ridiculous and Sonny was living in a frenzy because she couldn't get the seeds in the ground because if she had, the rain would have washed the seeds away from the garden. Well, what's the best way to water seeds that have just been put in the ground? A mist. To mist the ground or get a soaker hose out there. Well, I guess God could have thrown a soaker hose over the earth at that point, but he chose to send a mist to water what was there in preparation for man who will then be told to cultivate the ground. Okay? So that is all part of the creation story. Now I want us to notice what it doesn't say. It doesn't say between Genesis chapter 2 and Genesis chapter 6 that it never rained. In fact, I'm more convinced now than ever that at the end of the creation process, what we understand by science was occurring naturally because that was God's created order. The water cycle, for instance. We live in Iowa, so we understand what humidity is. Do you know what humidity is? Evaporated water. And what does evaporated water do? Or it's a gas. It rises up into the sky. It cools, forms water droplets. Falls back to the earth. That's called rain. I'd also point out that God doesn't promise to destroy the earth by rain. He says, I'm going to destroy it with a flood. And we're told later in that story that it wasn't just rain that caused the flood, that the waters from the deep sprang up out of the earth as the waters continued to rise. There are a lot of questions that I have no answers for that spawn from the not seeing rain side of the argument. Mostly, I'm really uncomfortable making a statement based on silence when we have no information on it. So I had to go back to the drawing board and have a lot of my assumptions challenged as I was looking at the story of Noah in the Genesis account of what God is doing on the earth with mankind and with Noah. So there had to have been something there in the story I was missing, something that Noah hadn't seen yet that I was missing. And then I read again Genesis chapter 6, starting in verse 13. God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me. For the earth is filled with violence because of them, and behold, I am about to destroy them with the earth. Make for yourself an ark of gopher wood, and you shall make the ark with rooms. Shall cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you shall make it. The length of the ark, 300 cubits. Its breadth, 50 cubits. Its height, 30 cubits. You shall make a window for the ark, and finish it to a cubit from the top, and set the door of the ark in the side of it. You shall make it with lower, second, and third decks. Behold, I, Even I am bringing the flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh, which is the breath of life, from under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall perish. But I will establish my covenant with you. You shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds after their kind, and of the animals after their kind, of every creeping thing on the ground after its kind, two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. As for you, take for yourself some of all food which is edible, and gather it to yourself, and it shall be for food for you and for them. Thus Noah did, according to all that God had commanded him. So he did. What Noah had never seen before was God's destructive power against his own creation. Every other instance we have recorded for us in the Genesis account where we have seen when man sins ends with God being gracious. And now God is going to destroy his creation by means of flood. And only Noah and his family are going to be spared. And what Noah's experience had taught him. Think about this, guys. Understand that Noah, when he was born, Seth had either just died or was dying. Now Seth is Adam and Eve's third son that's recorded for us. So look, think of going back historically, how many people are alive, the stories that are being told, and what's been happening on the face of the earth. Okay? That Noah's experience had taught him some very powerful things about God and about who he is as the creator of the world in which mankind was living. And we've talked about that. Mankind's sin in the garden leads to expulsion, not destruction. Cain kills Abel. Does Cain deserve death? Yeah, he does. Does God kill him? No. In fact, he makes it to where no one can. Right? He puts the mark on Cain so that no one would kill him. Would you call that grace on Cain? And what God has been revealing to himself in the world, and Darren and I actually had this conversation in the kitchen tonight, is that God has, I believe, been actively working among man during this time in history. Noah's walking with him. Enoch is righteous. I believe that Methuselah was also a righteous man. And we look at the righteousness and the chain of righteousness that's going through. And by the time we hit Genesis 7, Noah is the only one on the earth that's righteous. Things have gone bad really quickly. That Noah's experience with God is that he is a gracious, loving creator. And now all of a sudden God reveals to him that there's a judgment side to him too. How would you handle that? If your experience with God had taught you that he was gracious and loving, and then he comes to you and says, I'm done. The end of all mankind has come before me, and I'm going to destroy everything that draws breath. You'd never seen that before. Would you believe it? Would you act as if you believed it? Right? Because remember what I said at the beginning. Faith is not trusting in something for which there are no facts. Faith is not putting your trust in someone or something you know nothing about. Faith is warranted confidence and justified trust. Noah has faith. But now he has to act on something that he's never experienced before. He's never seen before. And what Noah is about to learn about God and his nature is going to be a far deeper and, quite honestly, a far more frightening lesson than not having rainfall on the earth. You go back to our reading in Deuteronomy chapter 7. By this point, when Moses is writing this, mankind had learned the lessons that are being talked about here about God and his nature. When God says, know therefore that the Lord your God, he is God, he is faithful. He keeps his covenant. His loving kindness is kept to 1,000 generations. with those who love him and keep his commandments. But did you notice verse 10? But repays those who hate him to their faces, to destroy them. He will not delay with him who hates him. He will repay him to his face. Therefore, keep the commandment and statutes and the judgments. So Noah has experienced God's faithfulness. He's seen it in action. He's been walking with God and living a righteous life by faith and doing all of these things. So that's verse 9. He's got verse 9 covered pretty well in his life according to faith experience and how he's doing things. But now all of a sudden he's being warned of the other side of God's nature. Verse 10. So he gets to work. Verse 11. Why? Because he trusted the source of the warning. See, I think at times we get so wrapped up in our minds about what we're actually having faith in. And if our faith is in God, as Noah's was, God says, we take it. Because that's where our faith is. He is the source of our faith. And therefore, what he says, we believe and act on. It's that's the faith that prompted this massive building project. That's the faith that drove Noah to believe in something he'd never seen. And look at what this did. The simple action. Well, I say simple because it's just building a boat, right? It was probably not a simple action. There's a lot of work that goes into building a boat as big as what Noah was commanded to build. But look at what this simple action does. We go back to Hebrews 11 real quick. Turn over there. I want to point this out to you because this is another misconception that I had, and I Googled it for like 30 minutes trying to find the Bible verse that would tell me exactly what I thought the Bible said. I was wrong. That Noah preached for 120 years, and that's, you know, why he's a preacher of righteousness. There's no scripture that tells us that Noah preached for 120 years. What Hebrews 11 tells us is that by faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence, that would be fear, in awe, prepared an ark for the salvation of his household. And in the building of that ark, or by which, is how the New American Standard puts it, in the building of that ark, Noah condemns the world. And becomes an heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. So it's in this simple act that he preaches, 2 Peter 2:5, and he's preaching two things. First, salvation had been made available to mankind. Second, the other side of salvation. The condemnation is there, ready and waiting for those who refuse to acknowledge and accept the salvation that God has prepared for mankind. What a frightening thing to be told by God that you alone are the only righteous person on the face of the earth. And it's because of his faith, because he believed the warning, that he becomes an heir. He is entitled to, he inherits righteousness. This led to a challenging series of questions for me as I was finishing up my time and study. Because I think what we see here in Hebrews 11 and verse 7 and looking at the backstory of everything that is going on here becomes highly applicable to us. Because I think we in the same way have been warned by God about something we've never seen. I've not seen judgment. I have faith it's coming, but I haven't seen it. I haven't experienced it. In fact, what I have experienced from God has been grace and mercy. And it's mind-blowing to me at times when I stop to think about the awesome nature of God and who he is and his great love and care for me as just a low-down, dirty person. And how he lifted me up out of the dregs of the squalor that I was in and showed me this immense grace and mercy to think that he could condemn, judge, and destroy. But if I have the faith that he'd save me, then I have the faith that he will destroy those who won't accept what he has provided, even though I've never seen it. So I have to ask the question, what kind of boat am I building? Am I building a boat worthy of the faith that I profess? Just because I haven't seen it doesn't mean it won't happen. And I know a guy that learned that personally. That's what God is calling us to be in our faith. Believing him. And then what he says, we take as, forgive the horrible phrase, the gospel truth. And we move and we act on it. And we build. And we work. And not everybody is going to accept the message of salvation that God's provided to mankind. Noah's story will tell us that also. But it's also a very frightening thing for us to consider that our lives of righteousness, our lives of faith, become, in essence, a condemnation of the world. And the lifestyle that is being presented by the world. We talk a lot about standing up for truth, speaking the truth, not being bowled over by the bullies that are out there trying to tell us that we shouldn't be acting in a certain way. The beginning of faith in our action and condemnation of the world's behavior is taking God at his word, living the life that he's called us to. We're going to stand and sing the song. Galen's got it ready. We're ready to stand up here in a second, I'm sure. But we'll leave you with the question that I had asked earlier. What kind of boat are you building? What kind of life are you living? What is your faith saying to the world? Is it condemning it or not? Let's be a people who live faithfully, believing God and what he says, taking it as the truth. We know that he is faithful. What he says he will do. We can take that to the bank. You find yourself struggling with these concepts, finding it difficult to live the faith that these characters in Hebrews 11 are calling us to live that is pleasing to God. Looking for strength and you're looking for encouragement, you're looking for help, the prayers of your brothers and sisters, counsel, whatever it is that you need, we encourage you to make that known by coming forward. It's also a time for us that maybe here tonight that have never gotten on the boat of salvation that Peter will also use as an example about how a person is saved and being carried through the waters to make that confession of Jesus and be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. Whatever it is we can do for you tonight, we encourage you to come while we stand and sing.